You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes and rate and review us. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. We're recapping the Heat's 124-86 loss to the Milwaukee Bucks. It started out okay. Justice Winslow hit a few shots. Whiteside made a nice jumper, and Miami's defense held up against a few of Giannis Antetokounmpo's drives. Then it all went to hell as the Bucks went on a 12-0 run midway through the second quarter. They opened up a 24-point lead going into halftime when they led 69-45, and they never looked back after that. Giannis picked Miami's double teams apart. He finished with a triple-double with 12 points, 10 assists, and 10 rebounds, and he was way more effective than that stat line kind of shows. And Milwaukee made 17 three-pointers compared to just 8 for the Heat. After the Heat beat them in December, David, the Bucks had all the answers tonight.
One of the things that you and I talked about in our preview was that we thought it would be likely that Antetokounmpo would have a big game. He would respond with a massive production or stat line because of the way he was mostly shut out against the Heat in December when a number of defenders were able to really limit him. The zone defense did a fantastic job of making him and other Bucks shooters uncomfortable. And while I think the focus was still on trying to limit Antetokounmpo's scoring, that didn't seem to matter. He found other ways to pick apart the defense and to make everybody else around him better. And I think that's the difference in Antetokounmpo this year. Like in the past, if you could keep him from scoring, maybe that was just enough to mitigate whatever impact he could have in a game. This is a different, better version. And this team is a different and better team than they've been in the past. They've got outside shooters. They've got a number of players that are healthier than they've been in years past. And he was just able to say, okay, you don't want me to score. You're going to cut off my drives to the hoop. That's fine. I'll find other ways to beat you. And he did with his rebounding and particularly with his playmaking ability. Those 10 assists, a lot of them to wide open shooters along the perimeter. If not, you know, probably I can't find the stat right now, but probably other hockey type assists too, where he made the pass that led to an assist. Yeah. Those kinds of things. They were moving the ball very well and just seemed to exploit Miami's zone defense. They went to it early and it was completely shut out right away. And then, you know, they just sort of fell apart from there. And you got to give credit to Milwaukee. They had a huge game, but that's the difference when you have a superstar like Antetokounmpo that can find a number of ways to beat you.
The Miami Heat's Cooper Moorhead tweeted out during the first half of that game that one of the things that he noticed about Giannis is versus in that first game in December, he was, and to use Cooper's words, long stepping into the paint, trying to force the issue, just trying to basically use those long arms and get those shots up at the rim. Tonight, he anticipated Miami's help better. He saw the double teams coming. He found which shooter that they were helping off of. And he found that shooter a lot. I mean, all five of Milwaukee's starters scored in triple digits. They had eight three-pointers between the starters. And then the rest of them came from the bench. So they basically got it. Giannis took care of business, you know, whether he was surrounded by starters, whether he was surrounded by the bench unit. It didn't matter. The Heat didn't really have an answer. They threw James Johnson at him early on. They doubled him very early, like we were talking about. They went to his zone even in the first half, and that didn't work. And we saw a number of other guys try, but there's only so many guys that can guard Giannis, and that number actually just might be zero. I don't know how many guys there are in the league that can credibly guard Giannis. And so I think more than anything, that game on December 22nd was more than a A fluke might be too strong of a word, but we can't anticipate Giannis playing like that again against the Heat. They do play each other twice more this season, and so this will be an interesting coaching battle, too, between Mike Budenholzer and Eric Spoelstra to see what kind of adjustments that Spo makes. You know, Spo won the first matchup. Budenholzer made his move. He won the second matchup. It'll be interesting to see what they do in the next time that they play each other. Did want to just point out Justice Winslow, 19 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks. Pretty nice game for him overall. I mentioned that he made a couple of shots early. He had that floater going early on. He made 3 of his 6 three-point shots. A good overall game for him. You know, there's not a lot of positives you can take from a blowout. Like, this was literally the worst loss of the season for the Heat. But if you're trying to, that was one of them. 19 points for Hassan Whiteside and 8 of 10 shooting with 8 rebounds for him and an assist and a block. But those were the only two guys that scored in double figures for the Heat tonight.
Yeah, a pretty sad effort. And I'm wondering how much of the credit goes to Milwaukee's defense versus some really bad shooting from Miami, because I feel like a lot of those looks were pretty open from a number of players. And just that three-point shooting, you know, as you pointed out, just 8 of 34 attempts for the Heat. Pretty woeful shooting. I mean, Olynyk went 0 of 5. Roddy Magruder, who's still surprisingly in the starting lineup, 0 for 4. Josh Richardson, 0 for 2. You know, even Winslow with his three missed attempts, you can't put the fault on him. Derek Jones Jr. taking two attempts, missing both. Adebayo, same thing. Deion Waiters, 0 of 2. I mean, that's just not good. You cannot have that number of players go completely scoreless from behind the arc and hope to contend on a night when the you know, the Bucks were hitting almost 50%, actually 44% of their three-point shots, 50% overall from the field, those kind of numbers. And look, they only took 8 free throw attempts too, the Heat. Not necessarily as aggressive, although they did finish with 48 points in the paint, but it just didn't seem like they were getting a lot of calls their way and they weren't drawing a lot of contact. So settling for easier shots. And again, some of those were wide open and those have to fall. They just didn't. And it was... Well, it led to a pretty demoralizing loss.
Yeah.
One that I think has a lot of Heat fans kind of giving up on this season after, you know, a strong past month and a half where they've won a number of games recently, including one against Milwaukee in late December. As you said, this was a kind of a step back. At least that's what it feels like.
You mentioned the free throws. Between Whiteside and Bam Adebayo, they accounted for 7 of Miami's 8 free throw attempts. Yeah. Derek Jones Jr. got 1 and 1 at the line, made his 1 free throw attempt. The other part about this was that the Bucks really controlled the pace early on. They put up shots early in the shot clock to start the game. Yeah. They missed a bunch of shots early, but it did force both teams to sort of pick things up a little bit. The overall pace for the game, 103.7 possessions per 48 minutes, yeah, where the Heat are typically 10 possessions fewer than that on the season. So, and that was a much faster than the game they played in December. So, again, going back to those adjustments that Budenholzer made, getting the pace more in the Bucks' favor was a big thing that they did as well. But let's go to Twitter and take some of your questions. We'll do that after this break. All right, we're heading to Twitter. We're taking some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This first one comes from Ferris, who asks, Deion Waiters doesn't want to be here. His body language on the bench has been bothering me since he got back. Never cheering or seems interested in the game. What's the best trade spot or... does he even have trade value right now? To add to this, David, after the game, the Miami Herald's Barry Jackson reported that Deion Waiters went off in the locker room about his playing time, saying, F patience. The company line has basically been, everybody's going to be patient. You're going to get your turn. Deion Waiters, he's saying F patience. I mean, this is not good.
Deion only played 12 minutes, as we talked about before recording. Only 12 minutes and all of those in the first half when it was already a blowout. Not sure what Spoelstra's motivation for that was. I don't know if he thought the game was already out of hand and he didn't want to give any minutes to Deion, or whether or not Deion wasted his opportunity in the 12 minutes that he played.
He didn't play well. He checked in at the start of the second quarter, as he typically has been doing over these last several games, and just didn't do the things that the Heat need Deion Waiters to do. Like, he missed 3 of his 4 shots. They weren't great shots. He kind of forced up a couple of three-pointers. Wasn't really playmaking for anybody else. And again, you can credit Milwaukee's defense for a lot of that, but Deion just, he didn't look great. And when you have a team as deep as Miami is, if you're not playing great, then you don't get to play. I mean, Tyler Johnson had a better game. He played 25 minutes. I mean, Derek Jones Jr. was doing stuff. He played 18 minutes. So and Dwayne Wade, of course, he played 22 minutes. So Deion got the short end of the stick tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly Olynyk only played 13 minutes too, and he went 1 of 7 during that stretch. So I guess Spoelstra felt like that neither of them were contributing offensively, or probably not contributing defensively either. And so they both sat for most of the game, especially in the second half. As far as body language is concerned, I haven't seen anything particularly bad along the bench there, whether he's cheering or not. I think there's been more than enough instances of Deion cheering or talking to guys on the bench. You know, maybe he's just not the most demonstrative, you know, guy on the bench, and that's fine. Just some guys aren't. We don't really see Udonis Haslem cheering much on the bench either, and we all know that he's a major force in that locker room. I don't think that's.
I've seen Deion do the throw his hands up when he doesn't get the ball thing a couple of times, like literally like twice I can think of. But that's Deion. That you get that. I've seen Justice Winslow do the same thing. Like, and to your point, nobody's complaining about Justice Winslow's relationship with his teammates. But look, it doesn't really matter what he's doing on the court. He's not happy with his playing time right now. He thought he should have been out there more. He wouldn't have, like, I don't care if he played 48 minutes. He wasn't winning the game for Miami tonight. So I don't really understand what the big deal is, especially when you're like, look across the locker room and you're like, hey, Wayne Ellington, you got in for the first time in 9 games. You played 8 minutes. If like Waiters would have gotten his 8 minutes, Waiters would have played 20 minutes in the game. It wouldn't have helped Miami anyway. So I don't understand what it is, but look, this is something that we need to monitor now because Deion's not happy, and if he's going to start throwing, you know, a fit in the locker room after games, if he's not playing enough, I don't know if Miami has been shopping him, but like when somebody's got to go, and somebody's got to go, and we have questions more about that later on, like if you're not happy, then maybe you're going to go.
It's tough to find what your role is when you're coming off the bench like that. Deion could have a positive impact off the bench, and that might be enough. That might not be enough for Deion, though, and that's the problem.
Right, and that kind of underscores the entire issue with the roster in general, is that you've got a bunch of guys that have to basically share minutes that, you know, in a perfect world, you're only playing 8 to 9 guys in a rotation. Miami is going 11 deep at this point. This next question comes from Ed. He asks, the Heat were not prepared for this game. Should we be worried about the middle of this road trip?
One of the things that I remember Josh saying in that Toronto game, in that Milwaukee game that we both covered, was that Utah was the low point. That loss in Utah during that 6-game road trip was the low point of the season. And it was the kick in the butt, I think those were his exact words, that they needed to kind of, you know, get to rock bottom and then build your weight back up. And then, of course, they have the worst loss of the season tonight against Milwaukee. So, you know, this team has found ways to bounce back in the past. And again, on the road, they faced a difficult West Coast road trip and they were able to win 4 of those, you know, 6 games against good playoff contending teams like Memphis and New Orleans and the Clippers. So I don't know if we're worried necessarily, but at the same time, we need to see some kind of deliberate response to this. This was a pretty demoralizing loss because one of the things that propelled that team back in December and during that 6-game road trip was the use of the zone coverage there and the defense that really helped slow the pace down and played towards Miami's strengths. Of course, the you know, the blossoming of Point Justice, those things are already, you know, established at this point. And maybe even around the league, the other teams have found a way to exploit those things to their benefit. So now it's what new wrinkle can we incorporate into the lineup so that we can have another level to achieve. And if there is no other level to achieve, then each of these games on this road trip is going to be a very difficult matchup.
I'm trying not to overreact to this game. No team in the league has beat the Bucks twice this season. I didn't expect the Heat to do it. You and I picked this as a loss. Now, I don't think it matters so much how much they lost by. This game got out of hand early, and the Bucks made a bunch of three-point shots, and the Heat didn't make a bunch of three-point shots that were open. So I think that exaggerated the point difference here tonight. And the next game is Friday at Detroit. Detroit's not a super good team. I think Miami should be able to bounce back. They've got a couple days off. They'll be okay. So I'm not that worried about it. What I am worried about is the fact that this Milwaukee game kicked off a stretch where 12 of their 16 games is on the road. The Heat have had the easiest schedule in the league up to this point. That's not the case for the second half of the season. We're really going to see who the Heat are, regardless if they have to play arguably the best team in the East or any team. It doesn't matter. Like, this is going to be a tough, like, the rest of the season is going to be hard. And so I think the honeymoon phase of Point Justice is over, and we're really going to see what the Heat are all about right now.
I mean, look at the upcoming 6-game road trip right around and right before and following the All-Star break. It's a 6-game stretch at Portland, Sacramento, Golden State, Denver, Dallas, and Philadelphia. That could easily be an 0-6 stretch, even with that All-Star break to help recover there. Yeah. I mean, Dallas is the worst team there. Sacramento's had our number even when they – even when they weren't playing particularly well, and they are playing particularly well of late. So this gets very difficult. As far as the rest of this road trip, it might be a little easier in that they're facing Detroit, as you mentioned. But even then, is Blake Griffin playing as well as he is? I mean, you hope that he can have a bad game. You hope that Whiteside can keep Andre Drummond off the boards. But who's going to stop Griffin from getting 30-plus points?
James Johnson? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, there's
Blake Griffin's playing at an all NBA level, but you know, teams have still beaten Detroit because you get like nobody else on the Pistons can really do stuff other than Blake Griffin. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like we're in Milwaukee, Giannis has got guys like Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton and 3-point shooters to kick out to. The Pistons just don't have that same sort of depth.
I just don't need a 20-point game from Luke Kennard or, you know, Reggie Bullock or something like that.
Random scrub heat killer. Yeah.
There we go.
All right, let's look at some of the big differences in the game after this break. All right, it's time for our stat of the game.
Take that for data.
David, what do you got?
Oh, you know, there were so many bad stats to choose from. It was particularly tough there. The one that I guess stood out the most was only 8 forced turnovers from Milwaukee. Again, they did a really, really good job moving the ball, creating different shots, finding the best shot. And of course, that led to that 50% field goal rate from the field. You know, they were really, really good. Only 8 turnovers compared to 18 for Miami. Miami was only able to capitalize off those 8 turnovers into the tune of 4 points. So it's not like they were generating a lot of points off turnovers without that defense there. Defense leading to offense sounds somewhat cliche, but in Miami's case, it's always been true as far as their style of play, because again, they want to control the pace, they want to slow things down, and that really starts with them being able to put defensive clamps under their opponent. Clearly not able to do so against Milwaukee, and that led to some pretty poor shooting on Miami's end as well. So they just were not able to play a game that suited their strengths, and Milwaukee played the perfect game against Miami. I think you may have tweeted something about not being a good matchup if Miami were to face this team in the playoffs. It would probably be a disastrous matchup for Miami, and I think we saw why tonight.
Yeah, and helping the Bucks with the turnovers when, you know, not all turnovers are the same. When your lead ball handlers are turning the ball over a lot, it's usually a reflection that the offense just isn't getting going. That wasn't the case for Milwaukee. Their lead ball handler, Giannis, their lead facilitator, I should say, 10 assists to 2 turnovers, a 5-to-1 ratio is pretty damn good.
That's not bad. Yeah, that's not bad.
And then you look at Eric Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon, 0 turnovers between the two of them. So that's, and then compare that to Miami, right? Justice Winslow, point Justice, he had 3 turnovers, which is more than he's had in a long time with, like, Ryan Magruder, who does a little bit of secondary stuff, 2 turnovers. And then you look at the bench when Deion Waiters and Dwayne Wade are leading the second units. Waiters had 3 turnovers. No wonder you only played 12 minutes, Deion. And Dwayne Wade had 2 turnovers. So that kind of is, again, a reflection that Miami's offense never really could get going. And credit Milwaukee's defense for doing that. My stat of the game is the fast break point differential. Milwaukee had 20, Miami had 5. And that's closely related to the turnovers that you pointed out, David. But what I was noticing there is that the Heat were having a really hard time getting back in transition against the Bucks defense. Even guys, you know, even if Whiteside was coughing the ball up near the rim, the guards weren't getting back fast enough. You know, it's one thing if you're losing the ball in the backcourt. It's another thing if, you know, the Bucks are getting out and running off a defensive rebound and you're just not getting back in transition. I mentioned the Bucks pushing the pace and getting it more into their style of play. They did that tonight, and that was also reflected in the fast break points here. Like, more than anything to me, just by getting out into the open floor and neutralizing Miami's strong defense, that helped the Bucks win this game more than anything. And it was kind of an old issue for the Heat, kind of rearing its ugly head again. We remember when Miami, to start the season, had a really hard time in transition defense, something we even noticed in the preseason. They've gotten better at that, but every once in a while they still have a game like this.
Was it... I feel like a lot of that can be accredited to Adetokounmpo running the offense, because he does, you know, cover so much ground so quickly. So let's say he gets into the teeth of your defense, he's already in the paint within seconds, and all of a sudden you're scrambling there, and that was what led to a lot of those open looks for perimeter guys on Milwaukee's. Yeah. You know,
but I even noticed like Eric Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon doing it, and Bledsoe 17 points, Brogdon 16 points tonight, and like there are a couple times where Bledsoe in particular was. He was going down the floor, and Josh Richardson just had a hard time getting back in front of him. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was tired legs. I don't know what happened in Milwaukee last night, but yeah. It was It wasn't just Giannis.
In January, who knew that it was that hotbed of activity that was going to take a lot of energy out of you?
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. If you got a smart speaker as a gift over the holidays, you could tell it to play Locked On or podcast Locked On Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.